All right. Good evening from California. It is really nice to be here with you this evening. My name is Anne Peruzzi, and I'm filling in for Kevin. Well, he enjoys some time. And I am really thankful to be a part of this Sangha. Really am. I'm just my heart is filled with joy to be here with you, with you all here this evening. So first, is there anyone new that would like to say hi? Either in the chat or raise your hand or just shout out. I think I recognize most people's names. Yeah. Okay. Well, good. So then if you've been all been here for, we know the drill, right? The typical schedule is we sit for about 20 minutes together with a lightly guided meditation. And then I'll give a little Dharmet talk. And then we save some time to open it up for comments, reflections, questions. Always love to hear from all of you. I feel like we sort of co-create the space. So in that spirit, I encourage you, if you feel moved to this evening to share about your experience, or if you have a question, love to hear from you. And I know that's not easy. So I honor that as well. So, all right. So let's get into our, meditation posture. And that can be, lying down, sitting, standing. You're feeling particularly, I know like the evening time, it can be very seductive to want to lie down or and please, by all means, if that's what you need to do, please do so. Just knowing that it can be difficult to stay awake. So if that's your tendency, just to be aware of that. And All right. So if you feel called to, you can close your eyes. Or keep a soft gaze, a few feet in front of you on the floor. I hope everyone can hear me okay. And taking a few moments just to notice there is a body, this body. In whatever way it's showing up right now. Allowing it to be, feel, to sense in whatever way it's showing up. Just noticing gently noticing any areas of tension. If we want to soften, allow that softening to happen. Areas around the face or the neck, the jaw, shoulders. Just on the exhale, allowing, releasing the body in any way that it needs to. Softening the belly. Releasing the pelvic floor, the hips, the legs, all the way down to the feet. Really important part of practice to develop a way that feels good to begin by just relaxing the body. And noticing the body in the posture, seated upright, relaxed and alert. You know, drawing attention to sounds in the room where you are. Allowing whatever is arising in your experience just to be as it is. The way things are in this moment, in these moments. Without resisting. Simply being willing to be open to the flow of experience. And when you're ready, you can allow the attention to rest gently on the sensations of breathing. You might pay attention to where the breath is most predominant, at the nostrils, chest, or the belly. Or resting in the whole body breathing. Breathing in, knowing you're breathing in, breathing out, knowing you're breathing out, with a kind awareness, breath by breath, by breath. If you look a little more closely, you might discover that rather than a single object, it might become more of a continuous flowing experience. A series of arising, staying a while, and passing away. the warmth, the coolness, the movement, pressure. Always changing. No one breath is like the other. This ever-changing nature of experience also applies to other sensations in the body. Tingling, pulsing, sort of an aliveness that sparkles. Noticing the movement and also the stillness. Maybe imperceptible, very subtle, like still water flowing. When the mind turns its attention away from sensations of breath and body, simply returning to the movement of the breath. Knowing that two thoughts come and go, arise, pass away. Thoughts, images. nothing to be held on to. And we'll be sitting in silence until the end of the sitting. Okay. Welcome again. If you joined us a little after the start of the meditation, I'm Anne, and I'm filling in for Kevin tonight so we can have some fun on a Friday night. Not that this isn't fun. I know he would say this is fun, but it's a different kind of fun. I was, having one of those, noble conversations with a Dharma friend yesterday, and when we were sort of talking about our relationship to the way things are, and I was, I'm like, oh, what would be something that would be, useful to talk about tomorrow night? And I thought of these three aspects of the Buddha's teachings that are really essential to understanding and deeply getting to know, and they're known as the three characteristics of existence, or the three marks of existence. And I wanted to focus on impermanence a little bit more, so a lot of you are familiar with these. And I was thinking about this, and I was like, a lot of people might be familiar with these, but they are so essential and so helpful. It's sort of like what often I come back to, and I hear what people come back to, is the first step. If you're working the 12 steps in a 12-step program, that first step of admitting powerlessness, right? And it's just such an essential piece. It's like you can use that anytime. It's like, okay, pause. I really don't have any control over this person, place, thing, experience, sensation, thought. Really, it comes in unbidden, and what am I going to do with it now? And so one of the ways we can helps us kind of be free of those things that we stick to, we get stuck on, is acknowledging these three really laws of nature. And the reason is that it's been said that they're essential to awakening, to dive deep into them and to understand them. And I would add, just sort of on a basic level, kind of really they're essential to live a more stress-free life, when we really can take a broader perspective. So they're seen as gateways to insight, and they are anicca, impermanence, dukkha, translated as sort of dissatisfaction of life or suffering, and anatta, the teaching of no self. And a more modern version of what these are called, and I first heard these terms by Ruth King, a wonderful Dharma teacher, and she called impermanence not permanent, dukkha, or dissatisfaction, not perfect. Things are not perfect. And finally, the teaching on not self, anatta, not personal. So it's kind of like a nice mantra, not permanent, not perfect, not personal. Kind of helps remember what they mean, and we can really apply them in the moment. So special focus tonight on impermanence, not perfect, anicca. So, right, everything is changing, right? Everything is changing. And in the meditation tonight, the idea there was to get in sort of the mode of noticing that things in the body are constantly transforming. Nothing stays the same. Right? And in our practice, when we bring mindfulness to the body, four foundation of mindfulness, the first foundation, mindfulness of the body. And the Buddha instructed in this teaching to contemplate the nature of impermanence, the arising and the passing away of experience internally, in body and mind, and externally in the world around us. So noticing the arising and passing of experience inside ourselves and outside ourselves. So why is this important? Why do we want to do this? Right? If we were in person, I might throw that out there. Why do we do that? Because we tend to grasp, we tend to hold on to the things that keep changing. Right? So what happens when we try to hold on to things that keep changing? How do we feel? We might feel frustrated, right? We feel dissatisfied because if things are impermanent, they're inherently unsatisfactory. We suffer because we cling to that which is impermanent. And so sometimes I like, we can think of it as when we lose things, we think we can't live without, right? Another way to put that is not getting what we want. Or, for example, we might, in another way of looking at it, the other side of the same coin, receiving bad news we think will ruin our lives. So what's that? Getting what we don't want. Okay. So this is the first noble truth. So we dip into the second law, which is dukkha, which is, this is dukkha. This is the stress of life that happens when we resist the way things are. And so we can see that interconnection between impermanence and things when they're not perfect, right? So the Buddha suggested we check out and see for ourselves if this is true. And this is kind of the good news, right, of this. Is if we remember this law, we are less likely to hold on, and then we suffer less. And theoretically, then we can let go a little more easily. And I wrote that, and then I thought, well, perhaps it's more accurate to say we were more able to create the conditions for letting go, perhaps. I like that because we're really creating conditions. We're creating the conditions for peace and ease and joy, all those wholesome factors, those wholesome qualities, when we can sort of look at, see, understand the ways we hold back or the ways we're blocked. And I'm distracted right now. I'm looking out the window. There's the most beautiful orange bird in the tree. Oh, wow. Okay. I have not seen that before. Okay. So we're able to create the conditions for letting go. It's not this efforting I have to let go. It's more like, oh, what's going on? How can I create the conditions for letting go? And when we can look at an experience, when we're holding on to something, when we're clinging, we can notice we're clinging. And then when we notice, we'd be like, oh, wow. Well, that's interesting. I'm just creating more suffering for myself. Do I really want to do that right now? So in active addiction, right, we know this. We spend so much time maintaining the high, right, making a pleasant stay. We're chasing that original euphoric high, that's what euphoric recall. So wanting to change discomfort in some way, change an uncomfortable mind state or mood, body sensation. So we're trying to control experience, right? And we keep chasing something we can't hold on to. So it's been said that, you know, this human organism doesn't do well with change in general. We don't like change. It's uncomfortable. It's uncertain. And our nervous systems aren't set up for, you know, a lot of unsettledness. So, and depending on our makeup and our nature and our histories, our backgrounds, it can be very, very difficult. Change can be very difficult. And so it's also said that for people with addiction, that resistance could be stronger. So maybe we need to work a little more skillfully with change and changing our relationship to the changing nature of experience. You know, things that reacting to things we don't want and reacting to things that we want more of. So, you know, I think back to COVID times when there was that instant, worldwide, massive change. And it was a terribly uncertain time. You know, and the great Thai forest teacher, Ajahn Chah, and Kevin reminded me of this when I was going through a tough time. You know, sometimes impermanence can seem, the word impermanence can seem dismissive or, oh, it's impermanent. It's okay. It'll pass. Whatever. He said, you know, in the words of Ajahn Chah, it's uncertain. It's simply the way things are, right? It's uncertain. So, but in that instance, right, it's like, well, change brings a lot of uncertainty. It's also a catalyst for growth, right? That's the flip side of it. And new opportunities can arise. And I was thinking of how this community, this Sangha that Kevin started at the beginning of COVID, arose during that time. And it's staying, right, for as long as it will stay. But it's become, you know, a vibrant, you know, connected community. And so, yeah, so maybe that's that, because of that, we, you know, dove more deeply into practice and recovery, and we grew up a little more because of it, right? So, you know, just to say the obvious, but see, it's obvious and we miss it because we take it for granted that everything is changing, right? That bird in the tree flew away. You know, day is changing to night. It's getting to be twilight here, you know, that beautiful golden light. Weather, you know, the very basic, our bodies, wow, constantly changing. Seasons, the seasons of our lives, right? People, relationships change. So nothing is permanent, nothing that we can hold on to, and nothing is solid. And we see those things, like nothing is solid. And as our mindfulness and concentration grows in practice, we start to see those more subtle layers of, for example, body sensations, more of that aliveness, the more we tune in into that. So, right. So on the outside, so yeah, take a body part, take a favorite body part. Or, you know, anything, a car, a piece of jewelry, a job, a loved one, you know, not to mention power, fame, money, all that stuff that we've built scaffolding around this sense of I, me, myself, and mine. This body, all those things we do, billions of dollars are spent a year on, like, cosmetics, you know, it's really, really interesting. So these things are always changing, right? They're not reliable. From the rise and fall of the breath, right, to you know, the days, the change from, you know, day to night, everything's changing. So I just wanted to say about these things that we think will make us happy. And we all have our things that we think will make us happy, you know, not just the things I mentioned, but we all have our own personal things and we know what they are. And we think, you know, in the moment they make us happy, and then we might get stuck there. And then it just doesn't feel good anymore because it's changing. It's like we get out of bed in the morning and, you know, we're rested, but then all of a sudden, you know, we get tired, you know, and we want to go back to bed. So, so happiness isn't external. And in fact, in the words of Sylvia Borenstein, it's an internal job. And I wanted to read a little bit of something from A Burning Desire. And Kevin here is talking about aspects of spirituality. And this first one is understanding that happiness doesn't come primarily through the material world, right? Which is in stark contrast to our culture here, especially in America. So while all these things may bring temporary gratification, they don't actually make you happy, which the authors of How We Choose to Be Happy define as a profound, enduring feeling of contentment, capability, and centeredness. So they're defining happiness as a profound, enduring feeling of contentment, capability, and centeredness. When feelings can be prompted by external things, profound and enduring feelings come through profound, enduring inner work. This inner work can take the form of a practice like meditation or a program like the 12 Steps. It can be done with a counselor, a therapist, our own self-reflection, commitment. Though it can involve external things like yoga, ritual, creativity, service, or study, its focus isn't on the externals, but on how they relate to our inner experience. When we make the shift from the external to the internal, we start to emphasize integrity and a sense of wholeness that orients us toward finding what is really true, sometimes at the expense of our transient pleasure. And then addiction, of course, is an attempt to sustain happiness through continuous pleasure. And it's a perfect example of the failure of this strategy. So just, you know, remembering that definition of happiness, I just think that, you know, the next time we might get caught in something that's less skillful or less helpful, you know, in thought, in word, in deed, just to maybe pause and saying, is this contributing to my true happiness, or is this sort of kind of robbing me in some way, in a gentle way, right? Not in a judgmental or critical way. Just wanted to say something about feelings too, because I really believe that so much of our unskillful and unhelpful behavior comes from wanting to control feelings that we think will overtake us, or perhaps they do overtake us for some time. But you know, especially I think in recovery, it's really important to know that feelings really they're not static. If we really look closely with our mindfulness practice, they really do change, transform, change in intensity and frequency. And that's kind of really important to note. And that over time, we learn to give them space, right? So when we give them space, they can naturally kind of play out. You know, we don't have to fix or control or fight or resist or judge ourselves for having them. All right. So we bring a friendliness. Some phrases I've picked up over time. This too. So if something's arising, that's not that is arising. This too. You know, this too is here. May I meet it with a friendliness, a willingness to open. It's like this, Ajahn Sumedho. This is the way things are right now. And this is life on life's terms, right? So the law of impermanence, this is the natural course of things. Things come and go, and we need not. There's a possibility of freedom, possibility to not cling. An awareness of impermanence really energizes, right? It can really energize our practice. It can energize us. In that we begin to take an interest in this moment, in this very moment, the present moment, which is really the only moment that we're truly alive. Yeah. So I think, you know, it really comes down to acceptance. Accept the things we cannot change, you know, part of that serenity prayer. Again, it might seem obvious, but how many times I can hear that phrase, that prayer, and just, okay, you know, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. So I had an experience today that I just kind of wanted to share to sort of bring home the point of these three ideas: not permanent, not perfect, not personal. Went to the doctor's office today. I knew what I was getting into, but I went there. And so a year ago, I had a pacemaker put in. They found something that was potentially dangerous. So to be safe, we put in this pacemaker that, you know, is supposed to help. And so over time, it was a year ago, but over time, it's created really some discomfort. So it turns out it's in the wrong place, which is why it's creating this discomfort. It needs to be taken out and replaced. Yay. And I tell you, I am not enlightened yet, because I there was some dukkha around this whole process. It was a shock. It was unexpected. And then this happens, you know, and I can go into blame, right? I can go into blaming, like, you know, my body, but you know what? I realize my body's not out to get me. My body, this is a body. There is a body. It's of the nature to get ill, right? And eventually die. So, you know, hearts do their thing. I have no control over that, right? So impermanent. What I thought was at least impermanent for many, permanent, quote unquote, for many years, things sort of just kind of upended on itself. Definitely not perfect. There was some suffering here. Okay. There was some. However, not as much as there could have been. So today I was reflecting on these teachings, and it was really helpful. I was like actually talking to my husband after we were sitting getting some lunch. And I was sort of going over this. I'm like, you know what? I'm feeling a lot better with this. I'm feeling a lot more peaceful about what needs to happen next. And this is how the Dharma works. You know, we're reminded of these things. You know, I'm talking to a Dharma friend, you know, a Dharma buddy, and these ideas start to bubble up. And then I'm trying to sort of work them out in this experience. Oh, what is this experience calling for? How is this working? How are these three laws of nature working in my life right now? So taking a step back, so the not personal is, of course, there is a body. We all experience, eventually, one time or another, illness, pain, imperfectness. And when I walked in there, the waiting room was filled with people, right? Probably much worse, with much worse problems than I have. So that also, not personal, taking it out of this self that can get fearful. It's like, oh, right. So when I get into some acceptance here, there's less clinging to anger and stress, more space opens, and there's much more freedom of movement, right? And more peace and ease. So that's do some reflections on some essential aspects of the path. And you know, the Eightfold Path actually is sort of designed to sort of help us change our relationship to these three aspects of nature. Change our relationship in more positive, more helpful, more skillful ways. So I think I'll end there tonight. Thank you for your kind attention. I really, really appreciate your participation in your own recovery. It helps me a lot. So, and we help one another. That's how it works. So if anybody has any, you know, anything they'd like to share, welcome to share your experience. Or Gail, yeah, I see your hands raised. Hi.
Hi, Anne, thank you for that. Since you just gave us an example, could you address how anatta or not self fits into that example?
Yeah, that's the not personal I was getting at. There's lots of ways to describe this teaching of not self. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I really like to keep it really practical. and a good way to do that is to say that two things. One is it's not personal. It's not, you know, I'm detaching from this notion that my body is not working. Somehow it's, maybe it's my fault. All of that, I can just remove it by saying, oh, there is a body. This isn't personal to me. Everybody has a body that's going to eventually, you know, get ill, get sick, die. You know, there's the couple of the recollections the Buddha taught, right? Those are the way things are. And so viewing it that way, it helps me a lot. And also just the people, other people are suffering in the same way in that office or worse.
I use that phrase myself. And sometimes I think I'm making light of something that's really much more profound when I just say it's not about me, yeah, which is kind of what I do. And because every time I've tried to look at that topic, it's like so incomprehensible almost. And so when I just say it's not personal, it's not about me, you know, it's even my interactions with people, you know, what they say and what they think, that's not about me. So sometimes I think it's much deeper than my light little, you know, coating that I put on it.
Yeah, you know, it is. It's subtle. It's profound. And it's simple too. And I wouldn't dismiss. I don't know. I wouldn't discount, you know, if it feels like you're dismissing a true something that needs to be worked through in yourself, then I might look at it and say, oh, well, maybe I'm dismissing myself here, and I really need to honor and acknowledge what's going on in this situation. But one way to look at not self too is that in the meditation tonight, or when you're meditating, when the mindfulness and concentration gets stronger, we start to sort of deconstruct. This is helpful with pain. We start to deconstruct, you know, we think pain is this solid thing. This pain is me in my body. But if we spend some time with it and allow it to open and be there, we notice that it's changing. That's not solid. There's many aspects to it. It's a continual flow of experience, like the breath, like the self. As concentration and mindfulness deepens, we start to see that this thing that we call I, me, and mine is really really energy. There is no one solid entity identity in my body that I can call, oh, here's the self. Like I can take it out. Like I could, you know, if I wanted to, you know, take out my heart. You know, there's no, even my heart, if you break it down into components, I was looking at this incredible scan today. like, oh wow, that's me. No, that's not me. but it is, but it's not. There's the relative level. Yes, there is a self, and I have to move around in the world and relate and so forth and so on. But on the ultimate level, it's really a continual flow of experience. And I'm just tapping into these concepts myself through deeper retreat time and reading and studying. So keep going, but again, not to discount the not personal, because it truly gets at the fact that this, you know, we're all connected, and it isn't just me. It isn't this. I hope that helps.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry to hear about your condition. I'm glad to hear there's a solution.
Oh, thank you. Yes.
Yeah. And Mike, I'm sorry to, you know, I'm saddened to hear about your situation as well.
Yeah, Mike. Good. Thank you, Gail. Abigail, hi. Nice to see you.
Hi. Anne, it was so lovely to see you and to hear you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Maybe it was you who mentioned they called them the three P's.
Oh.
Somebody. Mm-hmm. And I was talking about them to Eleanor, and I couldn't remember one of them. So I really appreciate somebody remembering things for me. And now I have it written down, so I remember what they are. Because it's wonderful. It's if you could remember anything, which I can't, but there you are. I wanted to know where the definition of happiness was in Burning Desire.
Yeah, bottom of page six, top seven.
Page six.
Bottom of page six, top of page seven. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So glad to see you.
Yeah, so glad to see you too. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, you know, three P's, the alliteration, love it.
Yeah.
Good stuff. It helps. Yes, okay. Anybody at Karen? Hi.
Hi, Anne. Thank you so much for your teaching this evening. I appreciate it. I was wondering if this group ever gets together in person. I would love to meet you guys. And I don't know if that's something that Kevin's ever talked about doing, but I just would love to meet you guys in person. That's all.
Where are you calling? Where are you from?
I'm in Sacramento.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, well, that's one thing, is like people are really kind of from different places. So that would make it a little challenging. But no, not to my knowledge, not. The ways we do kind of connect in person is through retreats, I would say, through Kevin's retreats. Yeah. Angela, do you know anything more about that? Or I know, I hear you.
Yeah, I don't think we put location on the contact list, but just thinking of ways for people to be able to be location and maybe at least be able to meet up. I know there's, someone in that area, and
right. Like
I'm kind of closer to Sacramento now, and Eleanor's, there. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's something to definitely explore, and because it is, that is nice to be able to do.
It is.
Sometimes when Kevin says that he's going to have like an in-person event, like in the East Bay or something, I often attend them, and I'll often see a handful of people from our community here.
Yes.
Attend as well.
Good. Thanks, John. Absolutely. He's been doing more day longs. Couple the sits, like San Francisco Insight, but that was on Zoom. So as things are opening up more. But yeah, that's a great idea, John. Thanks. So staying attuned to his websites. All right. If there's anything else, anybody? Last burning desire. Okay. Well, just to share the merit, share the share the benefits of our practice tonight with each other, with people in our near in spaces and rippling out farther and farther. May all beings be safe. May all beings be happy. May all beings be peaceful. And may all beings be free. Thank you.